did you happen to get in here?
I ran here.
The Ark is a source of unspeakable power, and it has to be researched.
This is a relic. Some magic is too powerful to sustain, so we imbue objects with it.
There are many relics.
Seems like the truth shouldn't scare anybody, man or boy.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Dragon King Dark, episode number 327. Thank you very much for joining me here. You have come in the midst of a series that's we're just a little over halfway through this series. And hey, no need to worry. You don't have to listen to all the parts of this series. We're not ranking this in any particular order. But what we are doing is exploring 100 of the darkest moments in pop culture history. And some of these have been scandals, and some of these have been moments in time where a specific genre of popular culture was negatively impacted by something that happened. Obviously, many of these have been tragedies. They've been accidents. They've been untimely deaths. They've been, we've seen everything from stampedes to riots to terrorist acts. And today we're going to talk about an accident that claimed the life of one of the most popular folk country singers, probably, I guess, in history. John Denver's music, it's not for everybody. I was never a big John Denver fan myself, but he certainly was a big part of popular culture when I was growing up in the 1970s and 1980s. I mean, John Denver was a very popular performer. He went platinum many, many times. And crossed over into TV, movies, and more. I mean, he was all over the place. You couldn't help but come across John Denver, whether you were a fan or not, in the 1970s, 1980s, when I was growing up. And he was killed at a relatively young age. His recording career, for the most part, was probably done. Like, his hit-making days were probably over with. But he was still a major touring act. He was only 53 years old when he was killed. And he had some negative publicity in the media as well leading up to this. He had been arrested on a couple of DUI charges. And it was initially, you know, kind of the rumors were that that may have played into this accident as well, although, as it turns out, it did not do so. So today we're going to talk about the death of John Denver. This is part of our 100 Darkest Moments in Pop Culture History series. This podcast is produced and distributed by whenitwascool.com and can be heard at figure4online.com, wrestlingobserver.com, Dark Matter Digital Network, and everywhere you would expect a major podcast to be: Apple, iTunes, Spotify, Amazon. Hope you'll subscribe. Hope you'll like, leave a review, perhaps. But the biggest thing you can do to help us out is go to whenitwascool.com and bookmark our website. Check out our other shows. Maybe order something from Amazon. But the most significant thing you can do is become a Patreon supporter. We have a very successful and thriving Patreon community. And we also have almost 2,000 shows in our archives, meaning if you're looking for some new stuff to listen to, well, we've got you covered. We talk about retro pop culture at whenitwascool.com. So let's talk about John Denver and who he was just briefly before we get into the circumstances of the accident that claimed his life. He was born December 31st, 1943, and he was killed October the 12th, 1997. He was known professionally as John Denver. Of course, you think Denver, Colorado. He's associated with the Rocky Mountains. He had the very popular song Rocky Mountain High, Thank God I'm a Country Boy, Sunshine on My Shoulder, Take Me Home Country Roads. That song was about West Virginia, but still you associate him with country living, folk songs, Colorado, the Rocky Mountains, places like that. But his real name was Henry John Dusseldorf Jr., and he comes from a military family. His father was in the Air Force, so he had flying, I guess, in his background and was one of his interests. So it wasn't like this was just, you know, he bought an experimental aircraft and that was that. No, he had a fairly significant amount of experiences as a pilot. His really the most of his success fell from about 1971 up through about 1981, kind of in that time period there, although he was active from as early as 1962 all the way up through his death in 1997. His real sweet spot was, you know, about 1971 to about 1981, that 10-year time period there. He had 33 albums and singles that were certified gold and platinum by the RIAA. He recorded and released about 300 songs, about 200 of which he was the writer for. So he was very prolific and certainly very successful. He recorded primarily with an acoustic guitar and sang about his joy of nature, his disdain for city life, his enthusiasm for music and relationships. John Denver's music appeared on a variety of charts, including country music, the Billboard Hot 100, and adult contemporary. He earned 12 gold and four platinum albums, with his most popular, most famous songs being Take Me Home, Country Roads, Poems, Prayers, and Promises, Annie's Song, Rocky Mountain High, Calypso, Thank God I'm a Country Boy, and Sunshine on My Shoulders. John Denver appeared in several films and television specials during the 1970s and 1980s, including, and this is probably the movie he's most famous for, 1977's Oh God, in which he starred alongside George Burns. He continued to record into the 1990s, and he was also a well-known environmentalist, very outspoken on that, as you can imagine, with obviously country and folk music being the themes of his life. He lived in Aspen, Colorado for most of his life, and he was known for his love of Colorado. In 1974, John Denver was named Poet Laureate of the State of Colorado. The Colorado State Legislature also adopted Rocky Mountain High as one of its two state songs in 2007, and West Virginia did the same thing for Take Me Home, Country Roads in 2014. An avid pilot, John Denver was killed in 1997 at the age of 53 in a single fatality crash while piloting a recently purchased light plane. And that's what we're here to focus in on, was because this is one of the darkest moments in pop culture history. And, you know, when you talk about plane crashes and car accidents and things like that, you expect a higher percentage for entertainers because they travel so much. They're on the road so much. They're traveling so far distances by airplane that statistically speaking, you would expect there be a higher total of car crashes or airplane crashes that result in death among entertainers. And that does seem to bear out pretty true. But one thing that's unique about John Denver's situation is, well, John Denver wasn't just a passenger. He was actually the pilot, and there's not that many times that happens. One of the darkest moments in pop culture history I covered on this very series was another musician, Glenn Miller, from the legendary Glenn Miller Orchestra. In fact, he was never found. His body was never recovered, and it was believed he went down as a passenger in a plane during World War II, as he was out entertaining the troops. So this is a different sort of thing. John Denver was his own pilot. John Denver died on the afternoon of October 12, 1997, when his light home-built aircraft, which was a Rutten Long EZ with registration number N555JD, crashed into Monterey Bay near Pacific Grove, California, while making a series of touch-and-go landings at the nearby Monterey Peninsula Airport. He was the plane's only occupant. The official cause of death was multiple blunt force trauma resulting from the crash. John Denver was a pilot with over 2,700 hours of experience. He had pilot ratings for single-engine land and sea, multi-engine land, glider, and instrument. He also held a type rating in his Lear jet, and he had recently purchased the Long Easy aircraft made by someone else from a kit and had taken a half-hour checkout flight with the aircraft the day before his accident. Now, there's one big problem here. John Denver wasn't supposed to be flying. No, his flying license, his permit was suspended because, as I mentioned, he had gotten in a couple had a couple DUI arrests before this, and so he ended up with his driver's license and his pilot's license both suspended at this time. So this was a completely avoidable situation. He should not have been in the air to begin with. John Denver was not legally permitted to fly at the time of the crash. In previous years, he had several arrests for drunk driving. In 1996, nearly a year before the accident, the FAA learned that John Denver had failed to maintain sobriety by not refraining entirely from alcohol and revoked his medical certification. The accident, however, was not influenced by alcohol use. An autopsy found no signs of alcohol or other drugs in John Denver's body, which, of course, that's a good thing, right? But still preventable had he been absolutely following the law. He was not licensed to fly at this point in time. The post-accident investigation by the National Transportation Safety Board, or the NTSB, showed that the leading cause of the accident was John Denver's inability to switch fuel tanks during the flight. The quantity of fuel had been depleted during the plane's flight to Monterey and in several brief practice takeoffs and landings that John Denver had performed at the airport immediately before the fatal flight. His newly purchased amateur-built Rutan aircraft had an unusual fuel tank selector valve handle configuration, and this would ultimately be cited as one of the major contributing factors in this. The selector between his fuel tanks was at a very weird, very strange, almost inaccessible location. The handle had originally been intended by the plane's designer to be between the pilot's legs. The builder instead put it behind the pilot's left shoulder. The fuel gauge was also placed behind the pilot's seat and was not visible to the person at the controls. So, yeah, he couldn't even look right at his fuel gauge. It was behind him. Very strange that they would configure it this way. An NTSB interview with the aircraft mechanic servicing John Denver's plane revealed that he and Denver had discussed the inaccessibility of the cockpit fuel selector valve handle and its resistance to being turned. Before the flight, Denver and the mechanic had attempted to extend the reach of the handle using a pair of vice grip pliers, but this did not solve the problem, and the pilot still could not reach the handle while strapped into his seat. I mean, they've literally got this rigged up. I mean, you're several hundred feet off the ground. It's probably not a good idea just to be rigging stuff up to, you know, sort of work. And in this case, it would unfortunately end up being fatal. The NTSB officials' post-accident investigation showed that because of the fuel selector valve's positioning, switching fuel tanks required the pilot to turn his body 90 degrees to reach the valve. This created a natural tendency to extend one's right foot against the right rudder pedal to support yourself while turning the seat. This caused the aircraft to nose right and pitch up. The mechanic said that he told Denver that the fuel sight gauges were visible only to the rear cockpit occupant. Denver had asked how much fuel was shown. He told Denver there was less than half in the right tank and less than a quarter in the left tank. He then provided Denver with an inspection mirror so he could look over his shoulder at the fuel gauges. I mean, my goodness, could you imagine driving down the road and having to do this, look back over your shoulder with a mirror somebody gave you to try to read your fuel gauge, and then at some point you're going to have to twist a knob with a pair of vice grips to get, I mean, look, this is just a disaster waiting to happen, and a disaster it absolutely became. The mirror was later recovered in the wreckage. Denver said that he would use the autopilot in flight to hold the plane level while he turned the fuel selector valve. He turned down an offer to refuel, saying that he would be flying for about an hour. The NTSB interviewed 20 witnesses about Denver's last flight. Six of them had seen the plane crash into the bay near Point Pinos. Four said the aircraft was originally heading west. Five said that they saw the plane in a steep bank, with four saying that the bank was to the right. 12 described seeing the aircraft in a steep nose-down descent. Witnesses estimated the plane's altitude between 350 and 500 feet. Eight said they heard a pop or a backfire accompanied by a reduction in engine noise just before the plane crashed into the sea. In addition to Denver failing to refuel and his subsequent loss of control while attempting to switch fuel tanks, the NTSB determined other key factors that led to the accident. Foremost among these was his inadequate transition training of this type of aircraft and the builder's decision to put the fuel selector handle in a hard-to-reach place. The board issued recommendations on the requirement and enforcement of mandatory training standards for pilots operating home-built aircraft. It also emphasized the importance of mandatory ease of access to all controls, including fuel selectors and fuel gauges, in all aircraft. Yeah, there was a huge series of errors, obviously, leading up to this crash that was really avoidable in so many ways. Not only should there not have been so many ridiculous, things he had to do to just to see the fuel gauge, just to change the fuel tanks, he shouldn't have been flying to start with because his license was suspended. We want to go now to the news report. This will be brought to you in two different sections, one before our mid-show break and one afterward, where we'll hear from some different experts about the crash that took the life of John Denver back in 1997. We'll be back right after this.
Experimental plane that John Denver was flying as the investigation into the crash that killed him continues today, Tuesday, October 14th, 1997.
From NBC News, this is Today with Katie Couric and Matt Lauer, live from Studio 1A in Rockefeller Plaza.
And good morning. Welcome to Today on this Tuesday morning. I'm Matt Lauer.
And I'm Katie Couric. Apparently, John Denver's friends wanted him to play another round of golf, but he was very anxious to try out this new plane.
Yeah, new indeed. He'd only owned the plane for a day before the crash. It's a tragic story, and we're going to talk a lot about it this morning.
We are, and indeed, Matt. Many of the pieces of John Denver's experimental aircraft have been recovered as investigators try to figure out what went wrong. This morning, we're going to have the latest, as well as a look at the plane that John Denver was piloting on that day. It's called the Long Easy. How safe is it? We'll try to figure out the answer to that question, and we'll be talking with one of John's friends a little bit later on, his best friend, that is, about John Denver's news.
Thanks a lot, Matt. Good morning, Katie. Good morning, everybody. As Katie and Matt just reported, today investigators hope to learn more about the plane crash that killed singer John Denver. They know this much. Denver bought the experimental plane he was flying the day before he died. NBC's Kelly O'Donnell has details now.
At the crash site off the coast of Monterey, California, crews have recovered about one quarter of Denver's plane. The wreckage of the engine has been located, and this morning divers expect to pull it up. Authorities don't yet know the plane's safety history, but believe it was about 10 years old. The aircraft was the type assembled by an amateur and classified as home-built experimental.
Just because it's in experimental category doesn't imply anything lacking with regard to safety.
Investigators have not talked with the man who sold Denver the plane. The singer picked it up after a new paint job the day before the crash. A source close to the entertainer says Denver had paid about $50,000 for the single-engine two-seater and believes he was just getting familiar with the plane when it crashed 30 minutes into the flight. Experts say those initial hours can be especially dangerous.
Now, 20% of the accidents that occurred in experimental aircraft were on the first or second flight.
Today, investigators will get their first look at Denver's flying records. He was a veteran pilot and even appeared in this documentary for Experimental Aviation. Today, the local coroner is ready to release Denver's body to his family. He is survived by three children and countless fans. Some remembered his music near the crash scene last night. Authorities say it's possible all the remaining wreckage will be recovered today. The plane will be reconstructed to help investigators find the cause. They'll examine the fuel supply and engine first. Kelly O'Donnell, NBC News, Los Angeles.
WhenItWasCool.com is your source for the best in retro pop culture. When It Was Cool features articles and podcasts on retro TV and movies, toys, action figures, pro wrestling, food, video games, and more. Hit the Patreon button to support us and get instant access to hundreds of premium podcasts and features. Family friendly and fun. WhenItWasCool.com.
Now, on Close Up this morning, the investigation into the death of singer John Denver. Police and federal investigators are still retrieving what's left of Denver's experimental plane, hoping to discover what caused it to plunge into the Pacific. Lieutenant Carl Miller is with the Pacific Grove Police Department. Lieutenant Miller, thanks for joining us this morning.
Good morning, Katie.
So tell me again, how much of the plane have you all recovered so far?
Yesterday at the hangar, they had approximately 25% of the airplane. More wreckage was recovered yesterday afternoon, evening, and that was taken out to the airport also.
And when do you...
First,
Go ahead.
Just I wanted to comment on behalf of the City of Pacific Grove. Like to extend our sympathy to the Denver family and all his friends and many fans. It's a tragedy, and we hope to a speedy conclusion to this investigation.
I'm sure they appreciate those sentiments, Lieutenant. Tell me when you expect the remainder of the plane to be recovered.
This morning, the divers will be going back into the water and hopefully recovering the engine, which is a main concern to the National Transportation Safety Board investigators that are here.
And then what happens after that?
Well, they will be conducting their investigation. They're very thorough, and we're here as support for them.
I understand that on the day or the evening that he crashed, he had made three quick takeoffs and landings, and then he had asked airport officials for permission for a full flight, and his transponder apparently wasn't working. Can you shed any light on that for us, Lieutenant?
No, I just heard the same thing. And he was in radio communication with the tower, but nothing seemed to be out of the ordinary is what we're being told.
Meanwhile, I understand this experimental aircraft was 10 years old. Will it help when you all are able to see the records as to who built it and you know, what kind of shape it was in and who owned it before John Denver did?
You know, that's really an area of expertise for the National Transportation Safety Board investigators, and we're just here to help them on site, so you probably should talk to them.
And very quickly, I understand toxicology tests are being performed. He had a couple of incidents with alcohol-related incidents. When will those results be available?
About 10 to 14 days, but I wouldn't draw any conclusions. Those tests are done routinely, and nothing that we're being told indicates any problem in that area connected with this flight.
All right. Lieutenant Carl Miller of the Pacific Grove Police Department, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
It's 7:13 now. Here's Matt.
Katie, John Denver was an enthusiast for experimental planes. He was even featured in a promotional video for the Experimental Aircraft Association. But many questions remain about the type and safety record of the home-built plane that he was piloting when he was killed. Mike Dornheim is senior engineering editor at Aviation Week and Space Technology. Mr. Dornheim, good morning to you.
Morning, Matt.
We call this an experimental aircraft. That's a technical classification, but these things have been flown by thousands of people. Tell me more about them.
It's a plane that has been a pretty well-proven safety record. Its safety is about the same as a Cessna single-engine airplane that you can buy, a certified airplane. If you go out and buy insurance for this Long Easy that Mr. Denver was flying, it would cost you about the same as for a Cessna 172.
But you talk about a pretty well-proven safety record. I understand since the 1980s there have been something like 61 crashes, somewhere in the neighborhood of 17 fatalities.
All right, we're back, and thank you for joining us again. You can listen to all the parts of this series, 100 of the Darkest Moments, in pop culture history at our website, whenitwascool.com. And ultimately, of course, to keep this podcast going, to keep our podcasting network going, we want to encourage you to become a Patreon supporter at whenitwascool.com. Again, this isn't the only show we do, not even close. We have lots of shows dealing with a wide variety of pop culture and retro pop culture topics. Now, back to this particular dark moment in pop culture history, the death of John Denver, singer of many popular songs, multi-platinum artist, actor, environmentalist, activist, and somebody who, if you grew up in the 1970s and 1980s, I mean, he was all over popular culture. Upon the announcement of John Denver's death, Colorado Governor Roy Romer ordered all state flags to be lowered to half-staff in his honor. Funeral services were held at Faith Presbyterian Church in Aurora, Colorado, on October 17, 1997, officiated by Pastor Les Felker, a retired Air Force chaplain, after which John Denver's remains were cremated and his ashes scattered in the Rocky Mountains. Further tributes were made at the following Grammy and Country Music Association award ceremonies. In 1998, John Denver received the Lifetime Achievement Award from the World Folk Music Association, which established a new award in his honor, obviously very much associated with folk music, light country music, light pop, adult contemporary music. I mean, John Denver's music was really kind of hard to quantify. He crossed so many different boundaries. He was certainly wouldn't call him any sort of rock musician or anything, like not like classic rock, even though some of his stuff definitely crossed over onto the pop charts. But it was very light pop music. He crossed over into many of the country music. He was on the country music charts a lot, but I would say folk music is probably the best classification. Although, you know, really, how familiar are people with, you know, the Billboard Top 100 folk songs? I mean, come on, that's not something we all just sit around and know, but nevertheless, a huge selling star. In the year 2000, CBS presented the television film Take Me Home, the John Denver story, loosely based on his memoirs, starring Chad Lowe as John Denver. The New York Post wrote, "An overachiever like John Denver couldn't have been this boring." So apparently not a rave review there for his Take Me Home, the John Denver story. Although, look, let's be honest. John Denver probably was that boring. I mean, he wasn't just exactly this this wild man, although apparently he did battle some alcohol demons and stuff. His music was very, very light. On September 23, 2007, nearly 10 years after John Denver's death, his brother Ron witnessed the dedication of a plaque placed near the crash site in Pacific Grove, California. So if you go there to this day, there is still a plaque there in Pacific Grove, California. And there are other monuments to John Denver as well. In fact, in a Rio Grande Park in Aspen, Colorado, there are the lyrics to Rocky Mountain High at a John Denver memorial stone. So there's all sorts of honors and monuments to the memory of John Denver. On March 12, 2007, the Colorado Senate passed a resolution to make Denver's trademark 1972 hit Rocky Mountain High one of the state's two official state songs, sharing duties with its predecessor, Where the Columbines Grow. The resolution passed 50-11 in the House, defeating an objection by Representative Debbie Stafford that the song reflected drug use, most specifically in the line, "Friends around the campfire and everybody's high." Boy, I mean, when you think about Colorado, certainly you don't think about legalized weed, right? I mean, you know. So I imagine Debbie Stafford, I could be wrong, but imagine her political career wasn't super, super duper long. Oh, she was actually elected four times to represent House District 40. So way to go, Colorado. Just do it however you want to, right? Senator Bob Hagedorn, who sponsored the proposal, said basically, whatever. I mean, just to sum up his thoughts, was like, no kidding, you reckon? The song's called Rocky Mountain High, for Pete's sake. On September 24, 2007, California Friends of John Denver and the Windstar Foundation unveiled a bronze plaque near the spot where his plane went down. The site had been marked by a driftwood log carved by Jeffrey Pine with Denver's name. But fears that the memorial could be washed out to sea sparked the campaign for a more permanent memorial. Initially, the Pacific Grove Council denied permission for the memorial, fearing the place would attract ghoulish curiosity from extreme fans. However, permission was finally granted in 1999, but the project was put on hold at the request of John Denver's family. Eventually, however, over 100 friends and family attended the dedication of the plaque. And as I guess, well, it should be the place where his life ended. I mean, it's certainly, I think, appropriate to memorialize him there. On April 21st, 2011, John Denver became the first inductee into the Colorado Music Hall of Fame. A benefit concert was held at Broomfield's First Bank Center, hosted by Olivia Newton-John. Other performers participating in the event included the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, Leanne Womack, and John Oates. I guess all have some sort of ties to Colorado. And the John Denver Spirit Sculpture is a 2002 bronze sculpture statue that was financed by John Denver's fans. It is at the Colorado Music Hall of Fame. And it wouldn't just be Colorado that would memorialize John Denver. Obviously, when you think of places and associate with John Denver, you also have to think of West Virginia, right? I mean, Take Me Home, Country Roads is very much a song that it's all about West Virginia. You can't think about West Virginia without thinking about that very popular song. And March 7, 2014, the West Virginia legislature approved a resolution to make Take Me Home, Country Roads the official state song of West Virginia. Governor Earl Ray Tomlin signed the resolution into law on March 8, 2014. John Denver is only the second person, this is interesting, he's only the second person along with Stephen Foster to have written two state songs. And obviously he's got a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame that was dedicated October 24th, 2014. So rest in peace, John Denver. Again, he's, if you undoubtedly know a John Denver song. They're very popular. He wrote so many others that even other people recorded besides the ones he's so famous for. And again, if you grew up in the 1970s and 1980s, John Denver was all over everything. He was not just a music star. He was a pop culture star. Those Oh God movies, and I think there were multiple ones of those, while largely forgotten today, weirdly enough, I haven't thought about those movies in years. I haven't even really thought about George Burns in years. They were all the time on heavy rotation on TV back in the early 1980s, so he was all over the place. And a dark moment in pop culture history for sure is the death of John Denver. So thank you very much for listening to their show today, and we are continuing our series on 100 Darkest Moments of Pop Culture History. Next week on our show, we will delve into another moment that changed the course of pop culture in a negative way. And again, these are oftentimes tragedies, sometimes they're scandals, but whatever the situation, it is something that happened in the area of TV, movies, music, sports, publications that change the public consciousness, the public entertainment in a way that negatively impacted it. So check out our whole entire series. Check out our other podcast over at whenitwascool.com. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you here again soon with another show.
Here's a soundbite from the When It Was Cool podcast from whenitwascool.com.
Uncle Luke of Two Live Crew, and I wouldn't have thought of Two Live Crew again in my life probably, and then I brought him up on this show. That I bet you didn't listen to a lot of Two Live Crew back in the day, did you?
I was aware of it.
Okay, so I wasn't going to set you up and say, let's play some Two Live Crew, Tanya.
We was listening to some of the songs. I think I got my first kick, my first feel of it at the fair. And I'm like, wow, this is some...
Who is playing Two Live Crew at the fair? What? What kind of fair was this?
What? Well, I mean, I remember it being, I was on like that Polar, that it was called, it was a ride because called the Polar, and it slung you around real fast.
Okay, tell me more.
And I can remember this song being on, and I can remember it was starting going really, really fast, and I was thinking, okay, this song is really, really dirty.
Yes.
And there was little kids on there.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm thinking.
Not on the ride, but there was little kids around, and I was thinking, this song is really bad.
You can get more from this podcast and many others by going to whenitwascool.com. And remember, support us on Patreon. Hey, everybody. Carl here from whenitwascool.com. I've talked to you a lot about our Patreon, which is the most important way you can support us. But let me remind you of what else we do. You can follow us on social media on both Facebook and Twitter. Grab the links off the front page of whenitwascool.com. Check out all of our free podcasts on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon, and other major podcast outlets. Check out Dragon King Dark, along with Stuck in the Desert podcast, Uphill Both Ways, Wrestling with the Dog, The Thrash Metal Show, Life and Times with KZ, our new show, The Plot, Dragon King Carl Classic Wrestling Audio Show, Fireside Chat, and Heel Mustache Podcast, plus many specials every month. Go to whenitwascool.com for everything retro pop culture and more. Hit that Patreon link for premium podcast content. If you're looking for something fresh and fun to listen to, then bookmark whenitwascool.com.